Hello and welcome to The Corridor here on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario, and podcasting on Spotify and Apple Music. I'm Dinah Jansen, and with me is CFRC Local Journalism Initiative news producer Jesse Bell. This regional news program features news from Kingston and area provided by local and regional journalists through the support of the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Welcome and enjoy. Hello and welcome to The Corridor, brought to you by Realtor Kim Purcell of Sutton Group Masters Realty. Connect with Kim today to find a new home tomorrow via kimpurcell.ca. I'm Dinah Jansen, and with me is CFRC's Local Journalism Initiative producer Jesse Bell and CFRC's Arts Coordinator Genevieve Hinch. Our top story is from CFRC's Local Journalism Initiative reporter Christina Laurie, covering the future development of three major recreation facilities in the city of Kingston.
Hello, I'm Christina Laurie, Local Journalism Initiative reporter for CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario. Coming up are some of the top news stories in Kingston and the Islands. You can listen to CFRC's news programs Today in YGK and Kingston Currents on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays at 5 p.m. or subscribe to our podcasts on Spotify and Apple Music. If you have any Kingston news tips you'd like to share, you can reach me at news@cfrc.ca. Three of Kingston's most well-used public facilities could look very different in the years ahead. The city has begun the long-term planning process for Centre 70, the Kingston Memorial Centre, and Portsmouth Olympic Harbour. Together, the three sites host everything from hockey games and the annual fall fair to the Memorial Centre Farmers Market, sailing programs, and community events. Last week, the city's Arts, Recreation, and Community Policies Committee reviewed the first phase of what's being called the Multi-Site Visioning and Recreation Facility Capital Planning Project. This first phase lays the groundwork for what comes next, examining the condition of each property, how residents use them today, and what they want these spaces to become over the coming decades. The Memorial Center was the center of much of the conversation, with decades of effort behind protecting it for community use. Goals for the center include preserving traditions like the Fall Fair and Farmers Market, while creating new spaces that allow the site to be active year-round.
Don't think of it as an arena site and park, but this multi-use hub. I think the opportunity exists to create new spaces, new program opportunities for the fall fair. And as it relates to the farmers market, one question I think we're going to look at from a design perspective is whether or not there can be an indoor-outdoor type space that's created, perhaps along one axis of the arena, depending on the configuration of that building itself. So a pretty strong commitment, I think, to coming up with solutions for those two particular groups. And then it would follow that issues around other events in the open space, unstructured use of the park.
One of the biggest proposals in the report is a partnership with Queen's University that could see a new twin pad arena built at the Kingston Memorial Center. The idea would replace aging ice at Center 70 while also meeting the university's varsity hockey needs. City staff told councillors those discussions are already underway.
That's the next opportunity, is working with Queens to come up with an arrangement. We expect that there will need to be some capital lease arrangement as well as an operating lease arrangement included in the facility. Of course, Queens will have other needs that are beyond the needs of just a community rink, such as dressing rooms and other training rooms and so on. And those things would all need to be considered within the lease structure. So those are the things that we've started to discuss with them, and that would be a next step.
If that partnership moves forward, it could also shape the future of Center 70, which is expected to be decommissioned as it currently exists in the next 5 years. The site occupies a large piece of land in Kingston's West End, and while city staff say there are opportunities there, they are still determining what the options are.
Kind of said, we think 5 years could be a timeline before we completely phase out the memorials, or sorry, the Center 70 arena. However, with the commitment from Queens to work with us on a partnership and on the leasing arrangement, it may be possible to advance those things should the funding come into place. The Center 70 is an interesting site. Of course, each site is unique, but for Center 70, there could be some other strategic uses for that site coming up, and I'm not able to really articulate what is going to happen at that site at this time, or what we're proposing might happen at this time. But through the work in phase two, we'll have a better picture and be able to come back with options for you.
It will ultimately be to council through a series of recommendations to contemplate what the best use of the land at Center 70 would be following a decommissioning exercise. And I think Director Elgersma and the team really want to bring forward not only what the opportunity, but quite frankly, what the cost associated with those opportunities are against the need, and a broader landscaped approach to looking at the needs in the West End of Kingston and in considering that site's activation.
All three facilities are aging, and each faces significant investment needs over the next decade. The report estimates more than $25 million in capital requirements at the Kingston Memorial Center, and roughly $19 million at Portsmouth Olympic Harbor, while Center 70 will also require major investment if it is to remain in operation. These facilities continue to serve thousands of residents each year, but they're becoming more difficult and more expensive to maintain. And waiting too long could create challenges beyond higher repair costs.
Just feel it's necessary to put officially on record that the aging infrastructure of these properties cannot be understated, the risk that the city is increasingly taking on. We saw what happens when we lost Center 70's ice, not for reasons of the facility's condition, but actually through a water break. And, you know, if we were to lose the Memorial Center and Center 70, we would be sufficiently depleted in ice in our community. And I raise that because council consideration has to think through, you know, the investment and the phasing. We'll need to consider what would be the greater impact if we were to lose the Memorial Center's ice, for example.
The report also reflects what residents said during public consultations held earlier this year. People consistently asked for flexible community spaces, indoor recreation, walking tracks, wellness facilities, cultural programming, and outdoor gathering spaces. At the same time, many emphasized the importance of preserving the identity of places like the Memorial Center while making them more useful throughout the year. This report will be brought to Council for final approval at their upcoming meeting on Tuesday, July 7th. The project remains in its early stages. There are no final designs, approved construction timelines, or detailed cost estimates. Those pieces will come during phase two, when concepts are refined and options are brought back for public discussion and council consideration. For CFRC News, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative, this has been Christina Laurie.
Thank you, Chris. Coming up next, we have Dinah Jansen with a story from the Local Journalism Initiative reporter for The Kingstonist, Michelle Dory Forestell, about staffing issues on the Wolf Island Ferry.
Thank you, Jesse. Hundreds of travelers were once again left stranded last weekend after the Wolf Island Ferry was taken out of service for nearly 6 hours because of a crew shortage, disrupting the only transportation link between the island and mainland during one of the busiest weekends of the summer. The interruption began shortly after 8:30 a.m. sailing from Wolf Island on Saturday, June 27th, when the Ministry of Transportation announced service was suspended because of a shortage of crew members. Service resumed at approximately 2:30 p.m. The Wolf Island Ferry is the only year-round connection for the island's roughly 1,600 residents, while also carrying thousands of tourists and seasonal visitors during the summer months. The MTO said the interruption was caused by a crew shortage. Saturday's suspension was another chapter in the Wolf Island Ferry's long-running reliability problems. Over the past several years, residents have endured repeated service interruptions caused by everything from mechanical breakdowns to staffing shortages, with each disruption renewing questions about the province's management of the island's only year-round transportation link. The shutdown prompted an immediate response from OPSU Local 428, their union representing workers on Wolf Island, Amherst Island, and Glenora Ferry services. In a news release issued Saturday, June 27th, the union argued the disruption was the predictable result of years of understaffing. The union said it has warned the Ministry of Transportation in recent years that staffing levels have become increasingly fragile. According to the union, staffing levels have declined over the past decade, even as ferry schedules have expanded to meet growing demand. The union also pointed to another service interruption on June 15th, which, it said, occurred after another employee called in sick. The ministry has not publicly responded to the union's broader allegations regarding staffing levels. The weekend disruption was followed by another service interruption Monday, June 29th, although under different circumstances. The MTO advised passengers via its social media channels that ferry service was temporarily delayed due to a medical emergency. Service later resumed. While unrelated to the earlier crew shortage, the second interruption highlighted the importance of maintaining reliable ferry service for island residents, commuters, and visitors who depend on the route every day.
Thank you to Dinah Jansen and Michelle Dory Forrestel for that story. Coming up next, we have a story from Brenda Little, LGI reporter for CJPE County FM, about a reconciliation event being held at the Picton Library.
June is Indigenous Heritage Month, and the Picton Library in Prince Edward County hosted a discussion with authors Derek Aronhi Nans Montour and Ellen Sandberg Miller, where they talked about their book Everyday Reconciliation, A Guide to Action and Change for All of Us. Two very different perspectives. Derek is of Indigenous background, and Elin is a Swedish immigrant who became interested in Canada's Indigenous history, resulting in her podcast, Everyday Reconciliation. I spoke with Elin and Derek about the book and steps one can take toward their own reconciliation journey. Elin, you're from Sweden. What fascinated you about Indigenous history here?
Well, when I moved to Canada with my Canadian husband and young children in 2008, I thought I was coming to a country known for its multiculturalism, its human rights, its inclusion and diversity, and in many ways that is exactly what Canada stands for and what it is. But we settled in Montreal, where my husband is from, and so I discovered that there were First Nation reserves outside of Montreal, both Ganawage, where Derek is from, and Ganasatog on the other side. And I was really surprised, because that meant that people lived segregated under different rules and under very different conditions. And I just thought that was, you know, a thing of the past and not something that I would find in Canada. So that triggered my learning journey.
And Derek, you've come from quite an interesting past, a mix. Your mother was from Glasgow, mm-hmm. and so your father would have been Indigenous. How do you think we can reconcile every day? What small things do you think we can do every day to try and help our own reconciliation?
I think I'll be honest, that for me, the most important thing that non-Indigenous people can do is to start educating themselves. A big challenge is that our system has been designed to not tell the truth. And so whether it's at the primary grades or high school or not, or us who are now older, we were never given the truth. So a big part is learning and starting every day of learning something new. Start with the people that are around you or close, and then start branching out further from there. Try to understand, why are there over 630 different communities? How many nations are there? What about the language groups? You know, an easy example is Canada often is pride, has a lot of pride for that we're two official languages. But the reality is they're two official European languages. And there's nothing embedded to actually learn any of the words or languages of the people where we live. Start with that. Learn some basic words within it. Being able to say nyawo, or thank you, to somebody who is Kanyakahaga makes a big difference, you know, because that's about relationships. That's about relationship building. So educate yourself, and then not be shy to start getting involved, you know, asking questions. If you work in a business, invite Indigenous people in, or figure out how to partner, purchase things from Indigenous business owners. You know, when you're seeking, you know, we often give gifts or give things. Look for Indigenous businesses to try to do that. You know, and the more we can add to that, even something as simple when we go on music and we go on YouTube or others, look for Indigenous artists. You know, that starts raising their profile and it, you know, it pops up on other people's view. And I think that's the thing is it's what we put value on, and in life we start valuing things. We'll put value on Indigenous as well. Final comment would be is when we think of culture of Canada, what comes to mind? All people, all settlers come from all parts of the world, and they bring their cultures here. And that's a beautiful thing. and they carry their cultures with you. But our culture was suppressed. Our language was suppressed. Help us bring that culture back, because that truly is the culture of this land, is our nations. You know, help us bring that back.
Thank you.
For the Local Journalism Initiative, frequencynews.ca and CJPE County FM, I'm Brenda Little.
Thank you to Brenda Little for that story. Coming up next, we have the sports report brought to you by CFRC Power Plays. This is Jesse Bell with your sports report brought to you by CFRC Power Plays. And today we are once again taking a look at the NBA offseason, including a massive trade involving the Toronto Raptors. The Charlotte Hornets continue to trade off some of their key young core, sending forward Miles Bridges along with a 2029 first and 2027 second round pick to the Phoenix Suns in exchange for Grayson Allen, Royce O'Neal, and a 2033 first round pick. For the Hornets, who also traded star point guard LaMelo Ball last week, this is a confirmation that they plan on building their team around their forward duo of Brandon Miller and Con Knupple. The Memphis Grizzlies and Portland Trail Blazers have agreed to terms on a trade centered around Memphis's star point guard Ja Morant. Morant, a former Rookie of the Year, has suffered a number of injuries and suspensions over the last three seasons, drastically decreasing his trade value. As such, the Memphis haul is much smaller than what it would have been, say, 2 years ago. Memphis does get two solid forwards in Grant and Murray, but if things work out for the Trailblazers and Morant returns to his all-star form, they may have a perfect pairing alongside veteran point guard Damian Lillard. A blockbuster trade involving the Toronto Raptors was made, as the Raptors sent forward Brandon Ingram, guard Grady Dick, two first-round picks, two second-round picks, and a first-round pick swap to the Los Angeles Clippers in exchange for Kawhi Leonard. Leonard last played for the Raptors in 2019, leading the squad to, so far, their only NBA title in franchise history. Kawhi is coming off one of his better and healthier seasons in 2026, putting up 27 points a game while also providing elite defensive ability. This is a high-risk, high-reward deal for the Toronto Raptors. Let's look at some of the pros and potential cons at play here. One of the big pros for the Raptors is the obvious upgrade from Brandon Ingram to Kawhi Leonard. Ingram underperformed, especially in the 2026 playoffs, and the Raptors also give Grady Dick a fresh start. Dick looked promising in his rookie season, but hasn't lived up to that potential since. Now, when Kawhi Leonard is healthy, the Raptors will have a top 10, arguably top 5 player on their roster, but health has not been a strong point over the last couple seasons for Leonard. When he's in the lineup, he will form one of the most defensively versatile frontcourts in the NBA alongside Scottie Barnes and Colin Murray Boyles. That's when he's healthy. It's also worth noting that Kawhi Leonard could be facing possible discipline from the NBA for his role in the Aspiration tree planting scandal. To make a very long story short, Leonard was essentially given a no-show job with a charitable organization as a way to circumvent the NBA salary cap by the Clippers owner, Steve Ballmer. Now, it's more likely that the NBA will focus their discipline on the Clippers organization rather than Kawhi Leonard, but nothing is a guarantee. The last time Leonard played for the Raptors, he was integral in taking home the franchise's first, and so far only, NBA title. Can he rekindle that 2019 magic? Or will the Raptors find themselves in a Brooklyn Nets-type situation where they make a massive trade involving a number of future draft picks for a superstar, only for that superstar to barely play, and worth noting, he's only on a one-year deal, leave the organization again? It's high risk, high reward. This trade will either make the Raptors or break the Raptors. That's a wrap for your sports report brought to you by CFRC Power Plays. Coming up next, your traffic and weather reports for the Kingston region.
And thank you to Jesse Bell for that update. And also thank you to our sponsor. Today's edition of The Corridor is brought to you by Kim Purcell of Sutton Group Masters Realty. Learn more about Kim and local listings for your new home via kimpurcell.ca. Coming up, we have the CFRC Environment Canada weather forecast for the Kingston region.
This is your Environment Canada weather report for the Kingston region. Wednesday, July 8th, 26 is your high, and because of the cloudy conditions, it's going to feel like 26, UV index only of 6, dropping down to 18 overnight. Thursday, July 9th, 27 is your high with a mix of sun and cloud in the morning. Becoming more cloudy into the afternoon, there is a possibility of rain, but it's only hovering around 17%, so it looks like it'll be another dry day here in the city of Kingston. Friday, July 10th, 27 is your high, feeling like 28 with the clear conditions in the forecast. A very sunny day here in the city of Kingston. Perfect start to your weekend. Saturday, July 11th, 26 is your high, feeling closer to 29. A few clouds in the sky, but largely sunny conditions, dropping down to 18 overnight. Sunday, July 12th, a beautiful, crisp, bright sunny day here in the city of Kingston, feeling closer to 30, UV index of 9, dropping down to 18 overnight. And then starting off next week, Monday, July 13th, 25, cloudy with a 55% chance of precipitation. It will be quite humid, feeling closer to 29 degrees, factoring in the humidity. Over to Genevieve Hinch with CFRC's concert and events calendar for the week.
Hello, Kingston, and welcome back to CFRC 101.9 FM. Broadcasting from Kingston, Ontario, I'm CFRC's Community News and Arts Coordinator, Jenny, and this is your weekly events and concerts calendar brought to you by Flying V Productions. Whether you're looking for live music, community events, workshops, markets, or family-friendly activities, there is plenty of happening in Kingston this week, so let's get into it. Tuesday offers a few unique activities, including ASL Workshop on Sydenham Street and Teddy Bear Hospital at the Central Library, where kids can bring their favorite stuffed animals to learn about healthcare in a fun, hands-on way. Salsa in the Square also returns to Springer Market Square with music from Los Garcia, while the evening features Bill Kirchin performing at the Pros and Cons Benefit on Wolf Island. Wednesday features a creative mix of activities around the city, including the Solar Punk Writing Lab at Calvin Park Library and Games in the Square downtown. Music lovers can catch the Limestone Jazz Collective as part of the Swinging Summer Concert Series at City Hall, along with performances by Jay Harris at Spacer's Dockside and Arm's Length, Mile End, and Meathead at the Broom Factory. Thursday marks the start of the Kingston Buskers Rendezvous, filling downtown streets with buskers and performers throughout the weekend. Families can also enjoy stories in the square, while the evening includes drag bingo at Daff Brewery and Buddhist meditation classes at the Sphere. Live music highlights include Mo Kenny at the Broom Factory, Matthew Holtby, Lane Rodsep, and Daniel Raymond at Musiki, and Queer Kong at Hotel Wolf Island. Friday brings plenty to explore with the Buskers Rendezvous continuing downtown and a quick and cute card making and scrapbooking workshop at the Ted Center. In the evening, Kicking It Country takes over the City Hall atmosphere, while music fans can catch In the Key of Blue at the Isabel Bader Center. Tim Baker at the Hayloft Dance Hall, The Oreos at the Waterfront, and Violet Archers with Hugh Christopher Brown on Wolf Island. Heading into Saturday, the Busker Rendezvous continues along the Saturday Session Concert Series in Confederation Park. Other highlights include the Mending Way Clinic at Cultivate Arts Common, the Napanee Country Jamboree, Tunes in the Tower featuring Kevin and the Kitchen Sink at Murnie Tower, and another performance in the Key of Blue. Live music also includes Who's Here at Spicer's Dockside, Jason Kent at the Cove Inn, and Ginny and Rearrangers with Squid Pistol at Overtime Sports Bar. Wrapping things up, Sunday, the Memorial Center Farmers Market returns from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m., while the final day of the Kingston Buskers Rendezvous continues downtown. Music includes the afternoon performance of In the Key of Blue, Head Over Heels at the Cove Inn. That's your weekly events and concert calendar for July 6th through the 12th. And for more information on any of these events, visit the CFRC website and keep it locked right here on CFRC 101.9 FM. This is your events calendar brought to you by Flying V Production, bringing live theater, comedy, and unforgettable entertainment to audiences across Kingston. Be sure to check out their up-and-coming shows and events through the season. I'm Jenny. Thanks for listening, and have a great week, Kingston!
And that's a wrap for this week's edition of The Corridor, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Don't forget to visit cfrc.ca for the latest in local and regional news headlines, concert and events listings, and more. You can also follow CFRC on Facebook and Instagram at CFRC Music and on Twitter X at CFRC. You can support CFRC and its independent news programming by donating via cfrc.ca. We'll be back next week with more in local and regional news. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for listening to this podcast produced at CFRC 101.9 FM at Queen's University in Kingston, Ontario, situated on the traditional territories of the Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee peoples, and brought to you by the generous support of Smith Engineering.
When it comes to Kingston real estate, local experience matters. Kim Purcell is an award-winning realtor born and raised in Kingston with over a decade of experience and 100 five-star reviews. If you want honest advice and results you can trust, choose Kim. Visit kimpurcell.ca today for more information.